This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Across the vast continent of Africa, collaborations between legislators and regulators are driving regulatory harmonization in efforts to increase the safety and speed of clinical trials, the registration of safe and efficacious new medicines on African markets, and the reliable availability of these medicines to the patients who need them. Recent efforts include the establishment of the African Vaccine Regulatory Forum, AVRF, to develop a roadmap for African country registration for vaccines, as well as a treaty to establish the African Medicines Agency, the AMA. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the DIA Global Forum. My guest today is Dr. David Mukanga, Senior Program Officer, Regulatory Affairs, Africa Systems at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. David also serves as Regional Editor for Africa for the DIA Global Forum and joins me today to discuss the state of regulatory initiatives designed to help advance the safe and effective use of quality healthcare products throughout Africa. David, thank you very much for joining me today and welcome.
It's my pleasure.
First off, David, your job title sounds really interesting. So I'd like to ask you, what are the responsibilities that you have as Senior Program Officer, Regulatory Affairs, Africa Systems for the Gates Foundation?
It's a privilege and very interesting and rewarding opportunity to have the opportunity to work at the Gates Foundation with our partners and facilitate or be part of programs that have direct impact on patients and their access to medicines, as I will elaborate shortly. Before I came into this position and before I joined the Gates Foundation, I spent several years helping countries in Africa build systems to detect and contain epidemics. And it was very interesting work, it was very rewarding, but it was very difficult to demonstrate impact. When epidemics happened or were quickly contained, few people took notice that this was happening or even believed that the reason why those were being contained in time was because of the systems that had been built. And that was a challenge until Ebola came in West Africa in 2013. Then people took seriously the value of investing in systems. So the work that I do at the Gates Foundation is really focused on the regulatory system side of things. I work with colleagues with deep expertise in regulatory, colleagues who come from the US FDA, who've worked with industry for many years, and bring and master that expertise to shape our strategies and work with partners to drive implementation with the goal of optimizing regulatory systems in Africa across the value chain, from clinical development into licensure and the post-licensure period. And the end goal really is to accelerate access by patients to quality medicines on the African continent.
The Gates Foundation is well known to provide funding to important initiatives throughout Africa, throughout the world, such as water initiatives and others. I'd like to ask you if you can answer this. Does the Gates Foundation provide funding to improve regulatory systems in Africa?
In fact, over the last 7 years, the Gates Foundation on its own, along with other partners, the foundation funding has been over $30 million over the last 7 years into the African Medicines Regulatory Harmonization Initiative, whose initial goal was to reduce by 50% the time that it takes to assess and register products through building regional regulatory assessment platforms. And the goal also was to eventually catalyze the creation of an African Medicines Agency. That is just in the MRH space, and there have been additional funding that the foundation has provided for the Africa Vaccine Regulatory Forum that sort of focuses on harmonizing and optimizing the regulatory environment in the upstream clinical development space. So yes, indeed, the foundation has been a major contributor of funding for the regulatory space. In addition to that, the foundation also has provided significant funding to the WHO pre-qualification program, which, as you might know, is a platform that is used by global procurers, the Global Fund, Gavi, and others. They rely on that system to procure products that largely, a big chunk of those products end up with patients on the African continent. So it's not just with the MRH and AVRF on the African continent, but also with the PQ program and also investment in strengthening regulatory systems in China and India. As you know, a lot of the products that come into Africa that are procured by Gavi and the Global Fund and so forth, a lot of those come from China and India. So our teams have been working with those regulators to strengthen their oversight of manufacturing in those jurisdictions.
I know that there was a recent conference, the fourth biennial conference on medical product regulation in Africa, which convened in Zimbabwe at the end of September 2019. And I understand the theme was a decade of regulatory harmonization in Africa. Where are we and where do we go from here? David, can you tell us what has been accomplished during this decade of regulatory harmonization? And what are some key takeaways from that conference, which I know you attended?
The time in Victoria Falls was very, very rewarding one as people took stock of the work over the last decade. The ideas around harmonization of regulatory systems in Africa started in 2009 when the African Union, NIPAD, and the WHO convened a meeting of the countries and the partners to begin to moot this idea. And then in 2012, pilot was started in East Africa. Let's try and work with this region, see how we can work with them to optimize the regulatory systems here, standardize the requirements and the technical requirements, and work with them to promote work sharing and so forth. Nobody believed at the time that in a space of 5-10 years, there would be 3, 4, 5 regions that were taking this on and trying to work together as countries to harmonize their technical requirements and do work sharing, let alone the coming together of an African Medicines Agency. So at the meeting in Victoria Falls, what was very clear were the lessons and the impact of the work over the last couple of years. It was very clear that in terms of the broad goal of reducing regulatory timelines from what was there 10 years ago, taking 24 to 36 months to assess and register product in country, to now us seeing this happening in 9 to 12 months in East Africa, in Southern Africa, where the forerunners of the initiatives was really, really rewarding. But also the fact that early this year, in February, the heads of state and government of African countries endorsed the creation of an African Medicines Agency. Nobody would have phantomed this 7, 8, 10 years ago. So that has been profound. I think the challenge is how do we then take all of this forward? Of course, it takes quite a bit of work to bring these 55 African countries to work together, but the regions have been powerful and the setting up of the East African region, Southern Africa, ECOWAS now studying, and the other Central Africa, the Horn of Africa, is amazing to see this. So it was quite an illuminating time to reflect on this progress, look at the challenges, some of the pain points, and together figure out how to address those and further drive this forward, but also how the regions and the countries might best work together within the framework of an African Medicines Agency.
Which regions in Africa have undertaken regulatory harmonization initiatives? You mentioned East Africa. Are there any others that have local, more regional initiatives around regulatory harmonization?
Absolutely. So in 2012, this started with a pilot in the East Africa community that is made up of 6 countries. And then in 2013, 4 countries in Southern Africa came together: Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, and Namibia, and created what has famously come to be known as the Zibona Initiative. This was a homegrown effort with very light external funding. They resourced themselves with very light support from we and others and really moved that work forward. That has now grown to embrace the whole of the SADC region, which is 16 countries in Southern Africa and the Indian Ocean, Madagascar, Mauritius, and so forth. And then there is West Africa, the ECOWAS, the Economic Community for West African States, that is made up of 15 countries, 5 English-speaking, 7 French-speaking, and 3 Lusophone or Portuguese-speaking countries. So that initiative also is underway. They've harmonized their technical requirements, and they're now starting to do work sharing. They put out an expression of interest for those who want to submit products through their joint assessment process and potentially have access to a 370 million population market across those 15 countries. And then there are early steps in IGAD, in the Horn of Africa, and Central Africa, the Congos, and those group of countries are also coming together and starting initiatives there as well.
At the conference in Victoria Falls, was there a sense that regulatory requirements across Africa may be converging, aligning, and is there an effort to do some work sharing, a concept that I believe you mentioned a bit earlier in our conversation? What were some of the thoughts and achievements discussed in Victoria Falls?
So in terms of the coming together of the regulatory requirements, one of the lessons has been that when East Africa started, they developed, suddenly based on ICH and WHO standards, developed their own regional technical requirements and standards. And then when ECOWAS started, they also developed their own. And the view has been that while that was good and there was progress, it might be better actually to think about developing these standards and requirements at the continental level and then having the regions and the countries adopt those, as has been the case through our ref on the clinical trial side, the Africa Vaccine Regulatory Forum. So there were a lot of conversations around the technical working groups. So for the first time, there were meetings of the technical working groups that have been created. One are suddenly on quality and the laboratories and so forth. There's another on blood and blood products. There is one on medical devices and diagnostics. And then AVAREF itself and a couple of others that may be coming on board in the future. So the idea of these technical working groups is that these really would be the foundation of AMA in terms of standard setting and development of guidances, that you have this developed at the continental level and then have them adopted by the countries with very minimal changes. So in a way, you create that convergence at the very beginning and then enable it across the continent. That was a major difference at this conference, the meetings of the technical working groups and the understanding that it's critical to ensure that Africa has, to the extent possible, one set of standards that are used by the countries. That will be powerful and game-changing in the medium to long term for Africa.
What about work-sharing initiatives? Are some African countries collaborating with each other to share the work of assessing marketing applications, for example?
Absolutely. That has been the hallmark of the ESC, the East Africa Community, since June of 2015. They have now received close to 100 products and assessed, I think it is close to 70 of those, and about 40 have gone through the process and received a marketing authorization at the national level through that work sharing. And then Zozibona, they didn't go into the standards and so forth. They went very specific to work sharing. They have assessed close to 300 products together, and close to 250 of those have gone through the process to the national level, been given a recommendation. Normally for all these initiatives at the regional level, you get a recommendation and a report, and then the applicant uses that, submits that at the national level, and is issued a marketing authorization. There have been some challenges in terms of the timelines that were set in terms of how quickly that happens and the reality of how that has been happening. So there's been quite some work going on in the ESC to optimize that piece of the process and make sure that once a regional recommendation is issued, that countries quickly issue a marketing authorization. In fact, they've set a standard of 30 days, and several of the countries are now beginning to adhere to those 30 days once industry or the applicant files at the national level following a regional recommendation. So it's very, very good progress. And then in ECOWAS, the first expression of interest was put out in September. They received 3 products within 30 days, and they're moving forward to assess those 3 products this coming November. So quite some good progress. And I mean, it's involving the experts from the country. So the regions do not have special experts. They're relying on the experts and the pool of talent that is coming from their member states to support this, of course, with technical support from WHO and other partners that are involved in these initiatives.
How does the work sharing actually work in practice? For instance, does one country take responsibility for reviewing the manufacturing part of an application while another country at the same time might look at the clinical portion of a marketing application? Is that how that works?
Basically, what happens, the model that East Africa and ECOWAS have taken is that they identify what they call a lead country. And in fact, SADC also has a lead country. So the applicant, because at the region, you don't have an entity that has the legal mandate to receive applications and process them. So they will identify one lead agency. So in East Africa, it's Tanzania. In West Africa, it's Ghana. And in Southern Africa, it's Zimbabwe. So in East Africa and the ECOWAS region, the applicant files with the lead agency. So that agency is responsible for screening, and they have been given the responsibility to assign the dossiers. And what they do is they will assign the dossier to 2 countries. So experts from 2 countries will assess it in the entirety of it, you know, not the quality or the clinical aspects of it. So you'll have a first assessor, and then you'll have a peer assessor or a second assessor who will also assess the application. And then the reports from those 2 assessors, the combined report, will be brought into a meeting of all the experts. And if the region feels they have the shortage of expertise in a certain area, clinical or a quality aspect and so on, or they're assessing a biosimilar and they haven't done that before, this is where the technical partners come in. Swissmedic, under the umbrella of WHO, they're sending their experts to support those countries during the face-to-face joint assessment meeting, when the reports from the two countries, what in Europe you'd call a rapporteur, co-rapporteur, that report will be presented at the joint assessment meeting with input from the technical partners as needed. And then the meeting will make a decision on the dossier. And if the list of questions, the meeting will have these compiled, and then the lead country sends those list of questions to the applicant and facilitates the conversation between the applicant and the region. Practically, that is how it works.
We have learned, all of us in the drug development community, about regulatory harmonization across the decades and how long that can take. ICH, of course, has been active for about 30 years. European harmonization took quite a few years to harmonize regulatory requirements and to found the European Medicines Agency. At what speed is the regulatory harmonization happening in Africa? And is there an understanding that these things take time and maybe require quite a bit of patience?
The example of the European Medicines Agency cannot be better. I mean, that is the one example globally of a region that has been able to do this and really bring the countries to work together under one agency and one framework. So I think there's a clear realization of that. We have seen at the regional level the challenges of just bringing countries to work together, the trust building. It takes several years to build trust between the member states. And the leadership of the AMRH initiative is cognizant of that. The regions and their political leadership are cognizant of that. The regional economic communities come together around a trade and commerce agenda. So they have a set of things that bring them together. So the regulatory harmonization is a piece of that, of creating an enabling environment for innovation and access to products for the patients in the region. But it's very clear that it takes time and people understand that. It's the trust building, but also it's going to take time to get the expert working groups to work together where those exist in the regions, understand each other, the countries at very different levels. So, for example, in East Africa, you have a Tanzania that is at maturity level 3. We're very proud. This is the first country. They're very proud of that on the African continent to achieve that WHO maturity level 3. There are others who are at level 1 and 2. They're not going to play at the same level. So people have to recognize that we don't all have to be at maturity level 3. We all don't have to be at the same level to be able to work share. We can leverage the strength of one another. But that takes trust building. That takes confidence building in the system. People do recognize that. And I think it will become clearer as the region takes the step to move from the regions to really beginning to create an African Medicines Agency that is going to take quite a bit of energy and coordination and support. And this is where the advice and experience of the EMA will come in. And I think the African region will be looking at regions like the EMA to share their experience and to share their advice and support in terms of how they navigated some of this. It may not be exactly the same, but I think those lessons will be key.
In that vein, some in the pharmaceutical industry have worried that African countries may impose regulatory requirements that are very different than those existing, for example, in Europe or the US or elsewhere. And so industry might worry that there would be new requirements, new demands from African countries that would impose, well, that would force the industry to do more work in addition to what they've done to meet, say, Northern Hemisphere requirements. What is the situation in Africa? Are they leveraging the learnings from other regions in terms of regulatory requirements, or are they creating new local requirements?
It's a valid concern if countries are going to begin to impose very different regulatory requirements and move away from a harmonized set of requirements, it's going to be a problem. And I think this is where the continental technical working groups and making sure that those standards apply across the continent, as we have seen with ABAREP and beginning to see now with the developing pharmacovigilance, an African pharmacovigilance framework, that will be a way to sort of insulate the ecosystem from these disparate approaches to regulation. And suddenly, if countries do that and you don't have the expertise and the capacity to implement a full-scale regulatory system, you want to build a US FDA equivalent and try to do that, your system is just going to overheat. And who is going to suffer is going to be the patient, because you're not going to be able to assess products and allow them to go through the system if you are not using 21st century best practices. But the good news is that we're seeing countries and regions interested in the principles of reliance, saying, look, if a PICS agency has already done an inspection of the manufacturing site, if the WHO PQ program has already done an assessment of a manufacturing site, if a product has been assessed by a WHO maturity level 4 or what we previously called an SRA agency, let's rely on that assessment. And so the issues we are seeing is how to facilitate that reliance. And we're seeing a lot of progress with the EMA collaborating with countries and regions and sharing the assessment reports and other agencies doing the same. I think that is going to be the key thing. Increasingly, people recognize that no agency on its own can use its resources to do full assessments and do inspections of all the range of manufacturing sites that exist out there that are bringing products in their country and maintain vigilance over time of all these manufacturing sites. So the concept of reliance is becoming really, really important, and many countries and many regions are recognizing that. I think the big piece will be how to create an environment that allows the confidential sharing of these assessment reports in a way that protects confidentiality and intellectual property and allows countries to practice this really 21st century regulatory practices that allow them to be nimble and efficient and not duplicate the work that is already done by others.
Turning to the African Medicines Agency, in June 2019, Rwanda became the first country to ratify the treaty to establish the AMA. So who is managing this process now, this ratification process?
When the treaty was endorsed by the heads of state and government in February, that was a landmark process. So the heads of state endorsed it, but then it has to move through two subsequent steps. So the first one is that each country needs to sign. So the heads of state endorsed the treaty, but they didn't sign it. The way the system works in the African Union for this type of treaties is that then the foreign affairs or the State Department, so to speak, of each country would then take this treaty and get it signed by the Minister of Foreign Affairs or the ambassador of their country in Addis, where the African Union sits, on behalf of the country. That's the first step. Once the country has signed the treaty, then it goes to Parliament. So the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the regulatory agency then sponsor the bill. And this will either go to the Parliament or in some countries will go to the Cabinet first and then go to the Parliament. And that's where the ratification happens. For AMA to come into force, into existence, we need 15 parliaments to ratify the treaty. So Rwanda has not only signed the treaty, they have ratified the treaty. There are about 5 other countries that have signed the treaty already and are now in the process of ratification. Those include Ghana. We understand Tanzania is far along the way. I believe Tunisia or Algeria, one of those two countries as well, has signed. So there are about 5-6 countries that have signed, are in the process of ratification. But the key thing is we'll need 15 countries to ratify the treaty. And the African Union Commission, the Department of Social Affairs, the African Union Commission in Addis, as well as NIPAD, the African Union Development Agency, NIPAD, that is based in Johannesburg, are driving this process. So those are the two institutions of the African Union that are driving this process, and they're figuring out how to engage the countries, how to provide the support, kind of messages that they need to engage with their stakeholders and provide information about the value of AMA and the impact or the benefit that AMA will bring to their countries and to different stakeholders, to patients, to industry, to the local manufacturers in their countries, etc., and to the regulator, of course. So that process is being driven by the African Union Commission, the Social Affairs Department, and the African Union Development Agency, NIPAD.
Of the 55 African countries, how many does the African Union represent?
Actually, all the 55 nations in Africa or nation states are part of the African Union. So the idea would be that once you have 15 countries ratify, you do not need the rest to ratify, actually. It will become an institution of the African Union, and the rest can be part of it.
Well, if only 15 are required to ratify the treaty, suppose the other 40 do not. What authority would the African Medicines Agency have, shall we say, over the 40 that did not formally ratify the treaty?
Basically, the instruments of the African Union are such that once you have the 15, the institution comes into existence. Now, there are obligations that the 15 that signed, the 15 that ratified the treaty have in terms of contributions to the institution, but also in terms of their voice, in terms of decision making and so forth. generally, when these institutions are set up, they will serve the entire continent, but those that have ratified the treaty have more obligations and sort of responsibilities and control of the institution. So what we hope to see, and this is the question that the African Union, NIPAD, could speak much more articulately about, is that many other countries will be part of this, but initially it will be those 15 that will sort of have their voice much stronger in terms of contributions and the governance in a way. For example, where is the institution hosted? If you have not ratified the treaty, I don't think you'll be eligible to host the AMA and so forth.
Can you tell us what are going to be the powers of the African Medicines Agency? For example, will it be the entity that issues licensing approvals for new medicines across the African Union, for example? How much power will this agency actually have versus the local powers of the individual countries?
So the way it's defined in the treaty, AMA will provide certain services and products that will be defined. The treaty does not specify the services and the products, but those have been subsequently defined in the AMA strategy that was approved at the Victoria meeting. There was a strategy and business plan that has been developed and endorsed, and that specifies the services and products that AMA will offer. Now, in terms of marketing authorization, AMA will not. What AMA will do is convene the technical working groups, develop standards and guidances, and then make recommendations of these standards, and then the regions and the countries adopt. When it comes to joint assessments and inspections, on the assessments, AMA will rely on the regions and the countries to pool their expertise, and then they assess the products. What AMA will do is issue a recommendation. That recommendation will not be binding on the countries. The recommendation then will be taken, the report of the assessment by the regions and the countries, and used, relied upon to issue a marketing authorization.
When do you expect the AMA, the African Medicines Agency, will be sufficiently ratified, as you said, by 15 states to become actually a reality? How much longer do you think this will take?
What the people who are close to the African Union processes and have been part of setting up institutions like this say, it takes between 3 to 5 years to get the treaty ratified. That has been the experience. But they say, based on the enthusiasm and the interest that the countries have expressed and their heads of state at the meeting in February, they think that for the case of AMA, it's likely to take 2 to 3 years. Those are the estimates that we're hearing. I for sure cannot speak with confidence about that, but based on the experience of the colleagues from the African Union, those are the numbers in terms of the period that they're giving us, 2 to 3 years, give or take. But as you can see already, 5 countries are on the way to ratify the treaty. That's the ballpark number that we have at the moment.
Have communities in Africa already seen the benefits of these harmonization efforts, or is it a bit too early to have seen such benefits?
A couple of areas. For example, when it comes to development of products and the clinical trial space, where AVAREF has been able to bring countries together for clinical trials that are happening, that are planned for multi-sites and multi-countries, to bring the countries together, to bring those regulators, to bring the ethicists together, to assess products and make a decision collectively and move forward. We have seen trials start much sooner than they should have. The decisions being made to authorize trials happening much, much sooner. On the average, across Africa, it takes 130 to 200 days to authorize a clinical trial. Under these joint assessments, there have been clinical trials that have been authorized within 30 days of submission. On average, about 60 working days from submission to approval. That is an impact in terms of the time that it takes to start a trial, the cost of running clinical trials, and suddenly that would subsequently result in quicker access to products. And then on the marketing authorization, we have seen oncology products coming in East Africa that had never come on the market before and being authorized much, much more quickly. So patients having access to those products. So there are very specific products that were not on the market that have gone through these processes, biosimilars in SADC that were not on the market, going through these processes because now companies see a region coming together, more simplified, more efficient processes, and it makes it attractive for industry to then file the applications into these regions. And so those patients who didn't have access to these oncology products finally have access to these, and these are life-saving medicines. So we're beginning to see impact at the patient level from these systems. And suddenly, as the pharmacovigilance framework is set up and we see better quality of data and better volumes of data coming through, and countries looking at this data and analyzing them and ensuring that the products that are on the market are safe, that impact will also subsequently come through as well.
Generally, in your observation, are African countries receptive to clinical research of new medicinal products, or are they, shall we say, suspicious of clinical research coming from abroad, for example?
There's been a seismic shift in this space. And I'll speak specifically to the regulatory community. 4 or 5 years ago and longer, it was almost unheard of to do first-in-human studies on the African continent. Those always people saying, look, Africa are not going to be guinea pigs for new drugs and vaccines and all of that. But increasingly, as regulators under the Africa Vaccine Regulatory Forum and all these harmonization initiatives have begun to understand the value of allowing or having clinical trials conducted in your region, that safety data that is generated, the specific profile of your population being taken into account, and therefore you having products developed that have taken into account the uniqueness of your population, the mindset is shifting. In February, we had at a meeting, CEPI and its group of developers present their plans. And interestingly, African regulators were saying, we want to see phase one studies happening in Africa concurrently as they happen in North America and Europe, because we want to make sure that the doses that are going forward into phase threes are right for our region. We can see data coming through that takes into account our populations, the genetics, and all of that. So it's amazing to see the seismic shift, but it takes engagement between product developers and the regulators and the population for people to begin to understand that it's important for clinical trials to happen within your populations.
Thank you for your insights, David. A lot of great information, and you clearly know the region extremely well. So I thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have this conversation. It's always exciting. And thank you to the DIA community. All the best.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.